Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden and I'm here with co-host Jeff Pitino.
How are you?
And we today are going to review CPAC 2007. That's the Conference on Procession and Ancient Knowledge 2007, which was just held over the weekend, and it was a blast.
It really was. I had a great, great time. It was a lot of work, but I think it was really well worth the effort.
This was our fourth annual Conference on Procession and Ancient Knowledge, and we had people come from all over the world, not just presenters, Graham Hancock from England and Robert Boval from Egypt, but many of the guests there came from Canada and South America and Hawaii and most of the states in the U.S., so it was really quite a fun event.
It really, really was, and it was a day and a half event. We started promptly at 8:30 a.m. on Saturday, and did presentations straight through Saturday and into a half day on Sunday.
And it was nonstop. We had probably between 270 and 300 people at the event. It was held at the University of California in San Diego, where Jeff's an alum.
I am indeed, and it was really nice to go back and visit my alma mater.
And he pulled a few strings to get us in and get some good service for us. For example, we had lunch at the University Club there, which was really, really fancy and nice. And
yeah, the Faculty Club did a fantastic job. And it's funny because as students aren't really allowed to eat there. And so that's actually the first time that I ever really got to sit down and have big meal at the Faculty Club.
Oh, so that's why you were oohing and aahing the whole time.
Well, it's one of those things you have to be invited by a professor to come have lunch with them at the Faculty Club.
That was great. And we put most of the presenters up, and many of the attendees stayed at the Estancia Hotel, which is a very nice facility just right across the street, walking distance. It's actually located between Scripps Institute of Oceanography down the road at one end and the Salk Institute just on the other side. And so there were a lot of fun things to do over the weekend too.
Yeah, and the Salk Institute, for those of you who aren't familiar, was named after Jonas Salk, who found the vaccine for polio originally. But the Salk Institute is a phenomenal building, mainly because of its architecture. And it's built out of just the elements, concrete, wood, and steel. There's no paint to speak of. I'm sure they've got protective stuff over the wood. But other than that, it's a very, very kind of natural environment. And the plaza between, it's made up of two main buildings, and the plaza between the buildings overlooks the ocean. And there's a stream that goes straight down the plaza. And if you stand at one end looking at the ocean, it looks like the stream kind of merges with the ocean. And where that stream hits the ocean is exactly aligned to sunset.
On the
equinoxes.
Right, yeah. So this was a trait common to the last Treta Yuga, where we find so many of the old megalithic structures, pyramids, tombs and cairns, things like this, built to alignment with the cardinal points. Well, looks like it's coming back right here in La Jolla, California.
Yeah, exactly. And that's so it was just a beautiful, beautiful venue, beautiful place to hold the conference.
Yeah, great setting. And we kicked it off with myself giving a few opening comments and talking about some of the latest research that helps us to better understand the ancients. One thing I mentioned was that there was some new research done just in the last year. I read this in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It was done at Washington University in St. Louis, where several researchers, scientists, were determining how the brain envisions the future. And to do that, they put subjects under an MRI and then would ask them a series of questions to see what part of the brain lit up. And the findings turned out to be rather startling, because what they found was the part of the brain we use to envision the future is the exact part of the brain we use to hold memories of the distant past. And when you think about it, it's kind of logical, because Parkinson's or Alzheimer's patients or people that have brain damage to their memory while they might be functioning in every other way, suddenly can no longer plan for or envision the future very easily. And this obviously leads to big problems. And I was just trying to make the point that that is one of the things that might be affecting us as a culture. I really believe we've forgotten our past, where we came from, who we are. You know, we're taught that we're just evolved apes, and yet the ancients said we're gods capable of great things. And we're taught that we're at the pinnacle of society, and yet we have all these environmental and world resources problems. And somehow those primitive ancients managed to live in tune with nature very, very nicely for thousands of years. So perhaps if we can remember a little bit of the ancient wisdom and who we are and where we came from, we might be able to better solve some of our problems in the future.
So with that, we're going to take a break. We've reached the end of our intro, but we'll be right back. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with Walter Cruttenden, and we'll be back in a sec.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. Today we are talking about CPAC, the Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge, which was just recently held at the University of San Diego.
That's the University of California, San Diego.
Oh, that's right. Well, you would know your alumni.
That is true.
Better than me. So, either way, it was a beautiful setting, and we now want to run through the different presenters that we had throughout the day and try to just recap briefly about their subjects. So, Jeff, introduce the first one.
Yeah, well, the day started off, we had a bit of a change-up in the lineup. Graham was going to open the conference, but Robert Bavall asked if he could as well because of his... he was on Egyptian time. So we were happy to accommodate that. So Robert Bavall, this was his first time at the conference. And as we just mentioned, he flew in from Cairo. For those of you who aren't familiar with his work, he's basically done some groundbreaking work, especially with the pyramids on the Giza Plateau. He's really the first one to recognize that the pyramids were aligned to the belt stars of Orion, which I thought was really huge.
Famous for, yeah. Right? Yeah. Just a little background on him. He was born in Alexandria, Egypt, in 1948. He went to England to complete his higher education in building, construction, and management. So essentially, he's an engineer. And from 73 to 85, he worked on various construction projects throughout the Mideast, Oman, Iran, Sudan, etc. And now lives, he says, where he can look out at the Great Pyramid every day.
That's just got to be a beautiful sight to have breakfast to. It was, in fact, in 1989 that he proposed that the layout of the three Giza pyramids and their relative position on the Nile was intended to mirror the layout of the three stars in Orion's belt and their relative position in the Milky Way. This thesis is now known as the Orion Correlation Theory, and became the subject of his first book, The Orion Mystery, which he published in 1994. The Orion Mystery has been translated into more than 20 languages, and that theory has also been the subject of a number of documentaries on everything from the BBC to ABC to Discovery Channel to a number of international channels as well. He's also co-authored several books with Graham Hancock.
And what I found interesting about his talk was his spiritual depth. He talked both about Egypt in quite some depth and the Egyptian cosmology, and about Nabta Playa, a very interesting site which is far south of the Giza Plateau that was discovered, 10 or 15 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, it's a very new site in terms of the realization that these stones were actually placed with an intended purpose, specifically one to mimic positions of stars.
Stellar alignments, right. And yet the site is now considered the oldest megalithic site known in Egypt and quite possibly the world. It's considered to be about 10,000 years old on a light, on a dry lake bed there in Egypt. And there's a fellow that has written a book on this, on Nabta Playa, Thomas Brophy. And Thomas was there also. Thomas is an astronomer, I think, out of the University of Boulder, if I'm not mistaken. And so he chimed in at a couple of points on Robert's talk, and it really made a very intellectual and delightful discussion.
Yeah, it really did.
Anyway, I think my overall impression there was that Robert was able to sort of blend the cosmology of ancient Egypt and give you a very good feeling for what the very early star watchers were interested in. That, you know, it wasn't simply just when to know how to plant the crops. It was something more than that. And he tied that to a need nowadays for more of us to kind of get back to nature. As a matter of fact, he made the point that many people that come over to Egypt for his tours had often never put their feet in the sand or never woken up to see the sunrise and really didn't know any of the stars at night. And he just was amazed at the disconnect of the modern mind versus the ancient mind.
Yeah, and the thing you spoke of, too, the way he kind of brought in the spiritual aspect of it was something I found fascinating as well, and it was really something I wasn't expecting from him. So that to me was a really pleasant addition to his talk.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think added a lot of depth to it.
So he did a terrific job and it was very, very well received.
In fact, he was, most of the presenters at CPAC tend to use visual aids like, projection slides, and he was, the only one who did not. But I mean, his talk just, I mean, was riveting. It was, it really had no problem keeping the audience's interest.
Right, and from the heart, quite spontaneous. And you're right, everyone else did use very nice visuals. As a matter of fact, some of them really fancy, especially the ones you made for me, Jeff.
Well, thank you very much.
So that was good. Our next speaker of the day
was Graham Hancock. And Graham's been a guest at CPAC for... This is his third year there, and we're always thrilled to have him because he always brings a lot of really interesting stuff to the table.
Right, and I'm sure most of our listeners are well aware of Graham Hancock. He's the author of major international bestsellers, The Sign and the Seal, Fingerprints of the Gods, Keeper of Genesis, The Mars Mystery, Heaven's Mirror, and Underworld. And his books have sold more than 5 million copies worldwide and been translated into 27 languages. They include 5 of the number one bestsellers in the UK. And Graham's been on a number of television shows, including the 3-hour Learning Channel series Quest for the Lost Civilization and Flooded Kingdoms in the Ice Age. And he's really known all over the world. Even in Japan, I understood he sold over 1 million books.
Yeah, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, so he's really one of the pioneers here of this alternative history movement. And, you know, as a pioneer, he's taken a few arrows in the back. The BBC didn't like some of his points because he challenged the traditional viewpoint quite harshly.
God forbid.
Right. And yet many of the points that they brought up to counter his points have since been found to be sort of incorrect themselves. So it's the controversy goes on, and Graham is, you know, a huge figure in sort of bringing some clarity to the depth of ancient cultures.
And Graham's talk started out, he kind of went into some of the research he had done, I know, with Underworld, talking about the rising of the sea levels and artifacts and ruins that we might find under the water. And one of the things that I really appreciate about Graham and the way he does his research is he actually gets out there and goes to the places that he's talking about. He did, I know for Underworld, did a lot of diving all over the world, going and seeing these places that were rumored to be underwater ruins of cities for himself.
Yeah, he had some beautiful pictures of Yanaguchi and the dive that he had done there with a number of other ancient underwater interested folks, such as John Anthony West, even got in a wetsuit and went out there.
Yeah, and I should mention that all of the pictures he used were taken by his wife, Santa, who is a professional photographer, and some of them are just stunning.
Yeah, so his presentation, once again, was absolutely first class. And he sort of took us around the world, both underwater and then above water, showing slides from his many, many trips, and then made the point very clearly that long before the dark ages, there was a lot going on. And he also tied this a little bit to the need for humanity to make a few changes nowadays. He once or twice referred to us as the potential next lost civilization if we don't start using world resources at such an alarming rate. So it was just a very good and balanced talk on ancient cultures and the need for action nowadays. So with that, we'll move on to our next speaker. I guess we should interject that these talks are available where, Jeff?
These talks are available on both DVD and CD, and if you want to find out how to purchase them, please visit the CPAC website, which is www.cpakonline.com. That's cpakonline.com, where we'll have information on how to purchase DVDs of each of the presentations. And this year, I mean, different from last year. Last year was the first year we ever recorded them. This year, it's really nice because we actually had essentially a two-camera setup where you'll be able to see the slides that the presenters are referring to as they're talking about them.
Yes. Yes. So thanks for setting that up, by the way, Jeff.
No problem.
And our next speaker after Graham was that Laird Scranton?
It was Laird Scranton. And
he was new to CPAC this year. And
new to the public presentations, although he presented in 2005 in the private session.
That's right, at Sedona there.
I'll let you talk about
it. Well, I was just going to say... it really took me a while to understand the profundity of Laird's work. I had learned some time ago that he was investigating the symbolism of ancient languages, particularly the Dogon, or Dogon, as some pronounce it, in, I guess it's Eastern Africa towards Timbuktu. Which is a culture thought to have been the remnants, perhaps, of the ancient Pharisees in ancient Egypt that maybe left during the persecution during the Dark Ages. But because so much of their present-day language incorporates ancient Egyptian words and ancient Egyptian symbols. And so, I just didn't appreciate the depth of his work, but I can now say that he is making such a tremendous contribution to understanding that the symbols themselves can be used to understand the word. I really think it takes our understanding of hieroglyphs to a whole new level. So if Champion helped us understand the phonetic value of the Egyptian hieroglyphs, then Laird is taking us to the even older symbolic value of these hieroglyphs. And it was a stirring talk, really. The audience
It really was. He's just a great presenter. He really speaks in a way that is easy to understand. The examples he used were really clear-cut and easy to follow.
We should give a little background on him. He kind of... got into this or was able to see it, unlike many other people, because he'd spent so many years working as a programmer. I know he's a graduate of Vassar College, and he's been published. What was his earlier book, Jeff?
His first book.
I think that was.
I think it was Sacred. Symbols. Oh no! His upcoming book is Sacred Symbols of the Dojon, and I am lost on his first book right now.
Okay. Well.
So sorry, Laird.
This was his second book, and he really made an impact with it, as far as I was concerned, as far as all the audience was concerned. Not only did he look at the Dogon culture and compare that to ancient Egypt, but he also compared the symbols themselves to the symbols used by Buddhist traditions and other ancient traditions around the world. And the conclusion that he drew was that these very, very ancient languages seem to have some cosmological basis to their most basic and original symbols. And we'll talk a little bit about that, a little more about that when we come back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden.
And I'm Jeff Pitino. And before the break, we were just finishing up talking about Laird Scranton's presentation on the Dojon. Or Dogon.
Right. And as you know, I've been reading a lot about ancient languages in our general study of ancient cultures here. And I read sometime in the last year that some of the oldest Chinese writing had been found here in the last 12 months. And if this linear paradigm of history was true, that, you know, the farther back you go, the more primitive man is, then you would think, well, the first writing then must be very crude and primitive writing, such as Mi Kil Bear or something like that. And it turns out that this very early Chinese writing has to do with a Taoist philosophy, which is the exact opposite
of Mi Kil Bear.
Mi Kil Bear, right. And really shows that ancients were much brighter than we give them credit to. And this is exactly what Laird's session brought out, too, when he would hold up those hieroglyphs and break them down and show how they relate to a very deep cosmology. It was clear that this is not some ABC type of, you know, infantile language forming. This very old language of hieroglyphs is a highly advanced and well thought out symbolistic language. So, yeah. Who else do we have there?
So after Laird, we broke for lunch, which we mentioned earlier was delicious at the faculty club.
Especially the cookies.
Oh, the cookies! Did you have the red cranberry ones?
I didn't have those, but I had the ones that were sort of had a little caramel flavor to them. So, and they were real thin and crispy. I just loved them.
Yeah, they were. The dessert was definitely good.
We'll have to take a break just to get some food now.
Yeah, exactly. And coming back from lunch, we had a really wonderful presentation from Robert Schock, and Robert is just a really nice guy, brilliant geologist, and. Always gives a really interesting presentation because you can tell he's used to lecturing.
Oh yeah, I talked to him beforehand, and he was saying that this is the exact type of classroom I give my big lectures in. You know, we were in a auditorium style room. I think it held 400 people or something mm-hmm. like that, and set up with great AV equipment and yeah. When he was talking, he. You could tell he went to his class mode. Did you understand that? May I clarify this point? And he would always get an acknowledgement from the audience. But real quick background on Robert. He's known for his studies of ancient pyramids and megalithic structures around the globe. Since 1990, he's been researching the age of the Great Sphinx in Egypt, and he's based this on geological studies and determined that the Sphinx origins go back to pre-dynastic times, much older than current Egyptologists give him credit for. And I remember seeing him years ago at the geological conference up in Reno, Nevada, when he first was introducing this idea. And geologists don't have any problem with him. He had 200 people in that room, and they were all saying, hey, sounds logical to me.
Yeah.
It's just that his dates are so far off from...
from traditional Egyptology that the archaeologists tend to have more of a problem with him. Which is, I think it's really interesting that, that one field of study sees it as oh yeah, that's just completely how it looks, and another field doesn't.
If I might add too, a geologist is truly a hard science. Mm-hmm. You know how long it takes a piece of limestone of a certain hardness to decay,
right?
Versus some of the other methods.
Yeah, and Robert had a number of really great pictures to go with his presentation, as far as showing areas of the Sphinx that had been refurbished and showing comparable temples that clearly had been refurbished from earlier times, and the difference between the original limestone and then the new granite facings and where things were added and taken away. And I thought what was really interesting too was, because I hadn't really considered this, is that a lot of the areas that he looked at the weathering on were areas that had since been refurbished over. So you actually have to go a few layers into the paws or the rump of the Sphinx, where there was clearly new stuff had been put over, to look at the weathering below.
Right. He pointed out that, for example, the rump of the Sphinx had been repaired in the fourth dynasty, that all archaeologists agree with. And yet it was going over rock that you can now see through in a few places, that is much, much older, much, much more worn than the repairs. So how could it have been built in the fourth dynasty if the rock underneath is so much more worn than those fourth dynasty repairs?
Exactly. And I think another thing a lot of people don't realize is that the Sphinx was actually buried up to its neck in sand for large periods of its existence that we know of, and the Egyptians have records of digging it out a couple of times.
Yeah, even when Napoleon got there, it was just up to its neck, literally in sand.
Yeah, because it's actually built down in this pit, and that was another interesting thing that he really showed, is some of the temple complex around the Sphinx, and I think he also went to, was it the Temple of Isis? I could be wrong on that, but he showed another temple some distance away that was built in that same architectural style, which is really very different from any of the other architectural styles that you see in contemporary Egyptian temples.
Right, right. So Schock did a just outstanding job, as he's been doing so many of these from Boston University, and where he did graduate work at Yale, and really had a lot of facts and science to back up his points of view. Should say also that he's written a number of books, Voices of the Rocks, A Scientist Looks at Catastrophes in Ancient Civilizations, Voyages of the Pyramid Builders, The True Origins of the Pyramids from Lost Egypt to Ancient America, and Pyramid Quest, Secrets of the Great Pyramid at the Dawn of Civilization, which is one that I happen to have just read, and I thought it was one of the most balanced of the pyramid books out there right now.
And I know he's got a new book coming out. It's actually that he was editor on. It's a compilation of some of the leading papers on parapsychology, which I know is a big diversion from geology. So it'll be interesting to see what he has to say in that book.
Yeah, it's neat. Schock is really, he's got this fundamental background in geology, and yet the more he studies these ancient civilizations, the more he's realizing that something far deeper was going on, and so he himself has been trying to learn more about these other disciplines and bring in a really nice thoughtfulness to the whole ancient culture's history.
So we have to take another break right now. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with our host Walter Crundon, and we'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Crundon is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Crutton with Jeff Pitino here. And
how are you doing?
We're running through the CPAC lineup we had this year, which was...
I think it was...
the best ever.
The best ever, yeah.
And each year just seems to get better.
Yeah.
So we've talked about Robert Bovall, Graham Hancock, Robert Schock, our first three presenters.
Actually, our first four. That would be four presenters.
Okay.
Who's counting? And then our fifth presenter would be someone I think we're all familiar with, Walter.
Hey, it was fun. Glad they gave me a slot on the podium here. I basically tried to tie together some of the information that we'd been receiving, and our theme basically each year at the Conference of Procession Ancient Knowledge has been to tell the story of Lost Star and Myth and Time, really. That ancient cultures knew an awful lot about the world and who we are and where we're going, that this information was lost during the Dark Ages, and that now that we're slowly coming back, post-Renaissance, consciousness is rising again, we're starting to remember. But we need to remember more of it because the world has some issues that need some fixing. And so I tried to lay out part of the hypothesis of what causes this rise and fall of civilization according to some of the Vedic sources, according to the Mithraic culture and a few others, which is essentially our solar system's motion through space. And there's a very good book out there on history right now by Jared Diamond called Guns, Germs, and Steel, and I've talked about this once or twice before, that he's got a good take that the regional differences between those tribes that have succeeded on Earth versus those tribes that haven't have usually succeeded because they're in the right geography that gives them an environmental advantage. You know, they have guns, germs, and steel, the bad germs, harmful to other tribes. And this, over certain periods of time, helps them to succeed. And I was just trying to draw the point at the conference that if you apply this the same general concept on a larger scale, then it's not just where we are on Earth that affects our well-being, our success, our consciousness, but where the whole Earth is in space. The geography of the Earth in space determines the environment from an electromagnetic standpoint, and that in turn affects our consciousness on a vast scale. It's roughly 24,000-year eon, which includes one golden age and one dark age. And so, I try to relate that to all the other speakers' work. And it's neat that each year we have these different guys that tell the story from a different perspective. And I
think that's one of the really interesting things about the conference, because it really allows people to see the commonalities and see how it all fits together and see how important procession really was to a lot of the knowledge and belief systems that ancient civilizations held.
Yeah, it was, according to Giorgio de Santayana, it was the common belief of most cultures prior to the Christian era, and then even during the Christian era, it was quite common up until the Darwinian Revolution. And then, of course, after that point, it was so widely accepted, this linear paradigm, that it almost became politically incorrect to suggest that primitive man knew something that we don't. And so the whole idea of cycles was thrown out. And maybe now the pendulum is swinging back a little bit to realize that you can have these regional differences caused by geographic and environmental advantages, and also have very long-term movements in consciousness due to much larger factors.
Right. And speaking of ideas that ancient cultures might know something that we didn't, brings in the work of John Burke, which is really just fascinating. And he's always interesting to listen to, because I think his work is so unique in terms of basically what John Burke did is, he works with a company called ProSeed Technologies, which exposes seed for agriculture to EM fields, which at certain frequencies increases crop yield significantly. And so he decided to go and look at culturally significant ancient sites that in some cultures had traditions of you would bring the seeds to the site to have them blessed.
Right. He was basically checking out an old mythology.
Right. And it turns out that a lot of these megalithic sites are built on spots where those certain frequencies and types of EM fields are focused and more prominent, essentially creating that same crop yield increasing effect on the seed.
And so John just reviewed a whole number of megalithic sites and their different electromagnetic properties, which help grow seed or help heal people from certain issues, according to a shaman, sites like Avebury, where we have all these polarity alignments that we still don't know what they mean. And his work caused such people in the audience to say they were just blown away. What was the comment you heard about epiphanies?
Oh, someone came up and sat down next to me during one of the breaks and kind of almost had this exhausted look on his face. And he just said, this, each of these talks is just one epiphany after another. And to me, that's really flattering, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to show people like what knowledge is really out there.
Yeah, and what makes those epiphanies, I think, is seeing how they connect.
Yeah,
right.
I agree. Right. And so we're due for a break in about 30 seconds, but we can take it a little early, and we'll come back and talk about John Anthony West, who's always one of the more interesting speakers of the conference.
Mr. Charming himself. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. We were going through the CPAC lineup, and now we come to John Anthony West. He is a rebel Egyptologist, if there ever was one. He's a writer, scholar, Pythagorean. He's written several books, the author of The Traveler's Key to Ancient Egypt, and also Serpent in the Sky, The High Wisdom of Ancient Egypt.
And he's also a very well-studied student of, as he says, the unpronounceable Egyptologist R.A. Schwaller de Lubis.
Right, who was a French mathematician and orientalist, and probably the first to realize the deep symbolism, I should say the first in modern time, the deep symbolism of the ancient Egyptians. Anyway, John is one of my favorites. He's, one of the older gents there. at CPAC, but just unbridled in his energy and off-the-cuff comments about what's going on in modern Egyptology today. And so he really did an outstanding job. I know he's talked here before, but for me, this was the first time that I really understood Egyptian cosmology from soup to nuts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always compare things to the Vedic culture because that's what I'm most familiar with. And he made me understand the very close similarities there are between the Egyptians and their symbolisms of going to the stars and how that relates to the whole Vedic notion of this inward journey to the stars or through the star of the third eye. It was a good talk.
Yeah, it really was. And he called it in his summary. It was the triple scholarly Sunday that would be briefly recap his work to date, and it was just fascinating.
Right, and he gave a beautiful little overview of Atlantis and some of the myth and symbolism of Atlantis, which we don't have time to get into here, but maybe we can bring John back on the air sometime soon and have him just talk about that.
That would be fascinating.
Got some insights there.
And following John Anthony West was John Daring, who has been a regular speaker at CPAC and always just really mind-blowing what he has to say.
Yeah, he's a lovable favorite. He's a physicist by day, specializing in technology for the generation and application of intense electromagnetic and acoustic fields and wave energy. And he really, really knows his stuff. He does a lot of very high-level government work. And he's appeared on Discovery Channel, History Channel, the BBC, ABC's 2020, U.S. News and World Reports. He's been in there. And yet, when he gets to CPAC, he kind of lets down his guard a little bit and just tells you what he really thinks.
Yeah, which...
Because he's around all these ancient guys. He got into how he thought the whole system works, why as our solar system goes around another star, how the interaction between our sun and our Earth with other stellar sources might have a dramatic effect on the ionosphere, magnetosphere, and consciousness itself. And laid it out in the most humorous manner I've ever heard.
Yeah. He just—I mean, it's kind of like a combination stand-up comedy routine / physics lesson, and I think one of the great things about his work is he explains it in a way that's easy to understand, and he also really goes into the science of it and goes into the okay, if we're going to make this claim that it's possible for stellar sources to somehow affect consciousness, what evidence do we have for that? And let's go through it. And he really does a kind of step-by-step through how the whole system would work.
Just rock solid. Well, his understanding of, wave energy is beyond really 99% of the scientists I've talked to. And he also got into, Einstein's unified field theories, which... I thought he would lose a lot of people, but he again broke it down to such a simple method that it really made an impact on the audience.
So. Yeah. And then so after John finished speaking to close the conference, we were privileged to be able to present something that really hasn't happened for 11 years. And that is essentially having the four horsemen of all the alternative history movement all on stage together. That would be Graham Hancock, Robert Bivol, Robert Schock, and John Anthony West, just for an open, free-form Q&A session with everyone attending the conference.
Right, and that could have gone on forever because there were so many questions, but it was really well-received. As soon as they got up there together, flash cameras were just going off left and right, I thought the whole conversation, being the last event of the conference, took a really neat spiritual turn there because we could see pretty clearly by that point that the ancients knew a lot how this rise and fall of civilization works, that we're coming back, but that the world has issues, and we really need to all work together now harder than ever to improve ourselves and improve the world via this ancient wisdom. And yeah, it was a really touching thing for me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So that I thought was a fantastic way to close the conference. And I hope that everyone attending had a great time and learned as much as I learned, just sitting there listening to the presentations that I could listen to well if I wasn't.
Yeah, no, everyone just told me how blown away they were. So I think it was very, very positive. And but nonetheless, we're going to mix it up again next year. And
yeah,
bring in new scholars, new scientists to look at this whole idea one more time.
So stay tuned. Check back to the CPAC website probably in a month or two, and we'll start posting up details about when and where the next CPAC conference will be. And also, once again, if you missed this conference and are interested in seeing or hearing any of the presentations, we will be having, and we do have DVDs and CDs available of each presentation for sale. And you can find out more information about that at the conference website, which is www.cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com. And, with that, we've got one more commercial break to take, so we'll take that right now. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with Walter Cruttenden, and we'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Thank you again for listening to Cosmic Influence. If you want to order a DVD or CD of any of the CPAC speakers, just go to our website, which is
www.cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com.
Or feel free to call us here at the Binary Research Institute, and that number is
949-399-0306.
Terrific. And we're always trying to get new guests on the show. If you'd like to hear us interview someone in particular, just let us know their name, contact information if you have it, and then email us. You can email me at walter@thebinaryresearchinstitute.org.
Or me, Jeff, at Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at binaryresearchinstitute.org.
And in the meantime, let's do everything we can to bring on the higher ages.